Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the game. I'm Russ Cohen. We've got Nico Riesgo. Nico, how are you?
Russ Cohen, my man. Got a special guest today. Mark Littell is on the line with us.
All right.
Hey,
Mark,
I'm glad
how
to
are
be
you?
There. It's super. Oh, just fine. I'm out in Arizona. It's burning up.
Yeah, Mark's got a book out called On the Eighth Day, God Made Baseball. I remember Mark as a pitcher with Kansas City, and then for me, the hated St. Louis Cardinals. I'm a Met fan, but that's okay. All water under the bridge.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And what a great name for the title, too. On the Eighth Day, God Made Baseball.
Well, he had something to do in the works. I mean, there's 9 men out there trying to beat up on the other 9 guys, and there's a lot of switches and everything. So a higher power definitely had a much adverse condition on this the game itself, that's for sure. But
Give us an idea of what the book's about.
Actually, the book is actually a really funny book. I've gotten some excellent reviews. I've had about 6 or 7 people talk to me, and they say, I didn't put the book down until I finished it. I said, it's 254 pages. And I start when I'm age 6, and I ended up on Forrest Gump statistics, and there's a lot of fun stuff in there that happens along the way. It's nonstop, a little chuckle here, a chuckle there. One, there's a story about Blue Angel. It's actually a free download, and it's where I knocked an umpire out in a game, and the catcher was just going to let it go between his mask and his glove and just hit him, and we thought the catcher would get knocked out. The umpire would just get hit hard and throw him out. But what happened was he got knocked out. By the time I got up to the plate, the catcher was sitting there looking at him, and he had his glove on his hip. And he said, "Hey, look, he's a snow angel." I said, "No, he's not. He's a blue angel." So, anyway, the ambulance came, picked him up, the whole 9 yards. There's just a lot more to the story than that. And then,
no, that story was hilarious. I got a chance to read that chapter there, Blue Angel. And what an awesome chapter that was, because it reminds me of even how much control the umpire does have to kind of like take over the game on his balls and strikes. And it leads into the discussion, are we going to go into the digital world of balls and strikes? And I'm kind of an advocate now after reading your chapter that, hey, I'm for a digital strike zone, and then let the umpire call it. Once he hears in a microphone, he hears whatever the digital tells him, strike or ball, and then he calls ball.
I don't know. I mean, that's a tough call.
I don't know
because,
about that.
Yeah. I feel like the same way Mark does.
I think the hitter would tear the robot up.
I think the issue with the strike zone part is, like, it's always going to be a little subjective. And I kind of wonder, I get having the eye being able to tell when the ball breaks the plane and everything, but I don't know if it can account for the way a pitch may drop into the strike zone and drop out of it. And I think that's the biggest problem, Mark. I think that's why you do need a human for that. Now, if you want to tell me you want to use a robot at first base on the bag, I might live with that more than I could live with home plate.
I would never use a robot behind the plate. Actually, you got the human factor to deal with.
Yeah.
The time factor right now, even it slowed the game down, and that's what's going on. And they're talking about speeding it up, but they've actually slowed it down on these things. And if they want to get commercial time, they might as well go to 2 commercials, because it's probably taking 2 to 2.5 minutes on those deals. And
right.
And that's a factor, And if you do that times, 8 or 9 of those things, you've got 20 minutes right there of commercial time eaten up, and they can just blast the whole thing in. But,
they love that commercial time, don't they? They just get extra money for the venue. So,
but they're not going to commercial time.
The
and speed the game up. They sell more beer. Let's put it that way. they sell
right,
a couple more hot dogs. I was always, That's one of the things I always tried to do. I always tried to trade a ball for two dogs. That was my deal. I go down in the bullpen. That was relish and mustard. You know, no ketchup. Don't spit on it, and we're okay. So
that's a good move. No, the problem, Nico. The problem that I would have with what you said is just basically you. I think the issue right now with the game is you might sell more beer and stuff, but the fans may tune out after it takes 2.5 hours to go through seven innings, which some games do. And I think if you didn't have players stepping out so much, that would be a big factor. Like Derek Jeter just made an art form out of it, and it was terrible. It's like the only bad thing you can say about Derek Jeter, but he would step out 4 or 5 times in a bat. That takes a lot of time. And also, Mark, you could probably speak to this as much as Nico could, but as a pitcher probably more. Those fake impromptu meetings with infielders talking to the pitcher, waiting on the pitching coach, just waste time too.
Right. It does. And, you know, you've got 20 seconds to throw a pitch. I coached in Australia 4 years. I coached 20 years as well. I played 11. Mm-hmm. I played 9 years in the show. And I feel really fortunate about that. But when I was in Australia coaching, the one thing they did to speed up the rules is if you didn't get the pitch in there in 20 seconds, they would just say it's a ball. So they just yeah, that was many years ago when they started doing that. And I got to thinking about that, and I said, well, that's you want to speed this game up. I said, you call a ball on somebody, and I said, sure, you'll speed it up. But if you got a Greg Maddux out there throwing around the zone, and you've got a pitcher all over the place. There's a lot. Well, I was one of them. I could be all over the place, or I could be right on the zone. But if the pitcher's not on the zone, the umpire can get rid of that pitcher really fast. Okay, I don't want to watch this. I want to go have a beer. This guy's cutting into my beer time, this pitcher. So, so that's the big deal right there. So you better throw the ball over the plate because you want to get the hell off the field. As a pitcher, I knew that because, one, I don't want to throw many pitches. If I'm throwing a lot of pitches, if I'm spending a lot of time out there, somebody's scoring. So that's the whole deal. Get off the field as fast as you can. And this book I wrote is not an educational book by any means. It's purely where I grew up in the Boot Hill of Missouri because, I'm redneck right down there, and then I've got, some webbing between my toes so it can run through all the mud because I came up. I grew up in the Boot Hill, and it sticks down into Arkansas. So that would make me run a little bit faster. We had soybeans and cotton and things of that nature. My brother caught me. He got drafted twice, and he played at Mississippi State. He didn't want to play, but, when you got – my brother is a year younger than me, and he's catching me. We could have a blast with umpires. If an umpire wouldn't call on a game right, I said, he just point to his mask, and he'd miss one. And that's – there you go.
That's the point. The umpires have so much control. And when I read your chapter, that was the issue there. The big beef is that the umpire was missing the calls, and then the catcher was, like, riding in the dirt how many marks that he missed. And he got to, like, 3, and the umpire told him if he got to 5, he's going to be out of the game. And then the catcher, called timeout and went out to you and told him to just lay one as hard as you can. Yeah. And he was going to purposely miss it. And it kind of turned it into a cross-up and just knocked the heck out of the umpire.
Well, the funny thing, too, is in Cleveland I knocked out an old lady. I shouldn't say that, but the name of the chapter is called Mistake by the Lake, Granny Gets Cold Cock. And, they had 60,000 people at this game, and what was funny, nobody ever drew 60,000 people in Cleveland except twice a year when they'd given away cars every inning, and it was the 4th of July. And I was warming up at Penn. There were 60,000 people there, and there's no possible way you could see throwing a ball out of this old bullpen that they had. It was a bunker in there. And we were fortunate to have a bunker because it was like I had butter on my fingers. And I threw a ball, and it went straight up into the stands. It was like a loose Scud missile. And so what happened, the catcher he kind of snickered. He lifted up his mask and, give me palms up, and I kind of laughed. 5 seconds later, the whole doggone earth of the bullpen was covered. And Galen Sisco, the pitching coach, called down and says, what in the hell is going on down there in the bullpen? Because we were opposite the dugout in the old stadium. There was, 25,000 pissed-off fans out there, and I thought we were going to play Alamo. And, and I think all we had for for ammo then was just some baseballs, a few baseballs. We had some candy bars and Copenhagen cans.
Some candy bars.
Yeah, you know, throwing. So that's all we had for ammo. But they figured out the safest place for me was to be pitching in the middle of the field. So Whitey got me in the game. It's a funny story. They're all good stories, you know, because go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say that is a good story. I was going to ask you, you were mainly a reliever, but I see that your last start was in 1981 against the Expos. Curious, was that like an emergency start? Why did they have you start after all those years?
They needed a body right there, and why do you know I could give him a few innings right there at that point? Actually, that wasn't my last start. My last pitching performance was in high A ball because I had to activate myself from a coach to a player.
Well, look in Baseball Reference, it says this was the last game you actually started as a starter.
Yeah, you're right.
The major leagues, major leagues.
Right,
yeah,
we don't want to make Sabre mad. Okay, yeah you're right.
What I really liked, too, is that you had the purposely wild pitches. Like, sometimes you wanted to be wild, and that was kind of interesting.
Oh, yeah. You'd warm up, you'd throw one off the backstop, you know, and you'd the catcher would say, I don't know about this guy. He gets a little bit wild every once in a while. And then, you know.
Well,
you had a pretty
good game, though. In this game, you pitched five innings. You only gave up three runs. You did walk five. You got a loss, but you pitched against the great Expos team. I mean, Andre Dawson and Gary Carter and Larry Parrish and Tim Wallach. Even Chris Spire was still pretty good. Cromartie. I mean, that's a hell of a lineup you had to face.
Oh yeah, there were some really good ones there, without a doubt.
Bill Lee faced
you,
so there you go.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm at a thing right now. It's we're trying to raise money for these Second Chance Kids, and they need all the help they can get. We're at Sunshine Acres. It's at a we're at a country club right now trying to raise some money over here. Mm-hmm. Billy Buckner's over here and John Hiller.
Oh, nice.
You probably don't, but yeah, and he pitched for 13 years with Detroit, which I did not know.
Mm-hmm.
And he spent his whole time there. And then you got Lou Klimchuk and AJ Pollock. Lou Klimchuk played for 15 years, you know, with Cleveland and a few other people. But
him, I don't remember. Hiller, I do.
Yeah.
Now, Pollock, that's a big name. I'm looking for a big year from him this year. The Diamondbacks definitely could use him.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to need some help. They need some pitching, it looks like, so whatever. I mean, who doesn't
need
anything?
They need a lot more than pitching. They're hurting. They let their all-star second baseman go. They let their catcher go. He's just a phenom. And they got to start all over up the middle. That's what you want. You don't want to ever give up your middle.
True. Yeah. I mean,
that's a very good point.
That's
the one thing I was blessed with Kansas City. I had Pacek and Frank White up the middle with Amos Otis right out there. And then you go over to St. Louis, and you got Tempe out there, which was good until he kind of acted up a little bit. And then we got, of course, Ozzie and her, and then you got McGee.
Yep.
So you got that triangle, right? So
Pacek was very underrated. I like Freddie Pacek. He could hit a little bit, but, boy, was he a great fielder.
Well, he was great. You know, the bad thing about Freddie is when he got a home run, he wasn't going to be with the crap for two more weeks. But he – because here he's got, you know, he's 5'4", he's a little big man, and all of a sudden he gets a home run, he's smiling with that great big old Texas Seguin smile on him, and all of a sudden that's what happens. And you know, Mayberry said, oh, he ain't gonna be worth a crap for two more weeks now. And then when he got traded, or in his last days, he was playing with the Angels, he hit three home runs in one game at the end of his career. That's interesting.
Now, for the Cardinals team, it's interesting because, you know, obviously you still had Keith Hernandez at that point, and I'm a big fan, and maybe you can give us a Keith story. But you also had Gene Tennis, and I forgot Gene Tennis was sort of riding out his career in the National League. I remember he was with the Padres after those great A's teams. But maybe you remember anything good about Keith? He's kind of grumpy now, but I'm sure he wasn't then.
No, Keith's a good guy. The thing about him is he's probably one of the best fielding first basemen ever, and he could hit line
ever,
right like crazy. You know, and then the other factor about Gene Tennis, I've got a chapter in there called Forrest Gump Statistics, where I've got some really funny off the wall statistics, and one of them was where I gave up Pete Rose's hit, and that was the only Pete Rose got off me, but he broke his bat. But Stan Musial was at the game. We're in Philly, and you know, when he got the hit, Gino was catching me, Tanachi.
Oh,
and so Gino comes out, and, you know, everybody's going nuts. And Gino lifts up his mask, and he says, hey, way to go, boy. Way to go, big boy. You're in the frickin' record books again. He used a different word than that, though. So.
Oh, did we lose you? Okay.
No.
He said, way to go, and then you broke up a little bit.
Okay.
That's
so
classic. What I really love, too, is the fact that you're a homegrown, like I said, are you from Missouri, and you got a chance to play with both hometown teams? That's got to be kind of amazing.
I was extremely fortunate about that. But I'm probably going to have to get running here in a little bit because I think they're wanting me to speak up here for some reason.
Well, everybody should get this book on the eighth day, God Made Baseball. It's on Amazon.com and in other places.
Yeah.
Mark, it was really nice to have you on, and say hi to Whitey if you speak to him. But thanks for coming on.
Real quick, I did speak to Whitey the other day. He's 86 years old now, and I said, I had to yell into the phone. I said, hey, Whitey, I said, this is Airhead. He said, what? I said, this is Airhead. Air, how you doing? I said, great. And so he said, well, I'm doing good, too. I got a pacemaker now. He said, I'm getting around pretty good. I said, well, that's great. You can sound good. You can probably go out and quail hunt the whole nine yards. So anyway, he's
doing
good.
That's great. It's good to hear that he's doing well.
Great story. Thanks for joining us, Mark. We'll see you again.
Okay. Thanks so much. Have a good day. Appreciate it.
That was good, Nico. Mark had some nice stories there, and yeah, I remember him as a pitcher. He was really good, and so we'll talk about a little current baseball. I mean, I heard Tim Tebow got a hit today, but you know the Mets experiment for now is over, and that's a good thing because I watched it. You know, I watched when he was in there. He really doesn't have a good idea at the plate against major league pitchers. Rick Porcello just destroyed him on his first at bat. I mean, it's one of these things
That was nasty. If you had to have your first at bat and then facing a nasty Rick Porcello Cy Young sinker, oh my gosh.
It was tough. But here's the thing. He is going to have to go through years of the minor leagues if he wants to really have a chance because, you know, he got picked off in that game. He was off base. He ran off base too early. Some of those things that I had talked to you about, instinctual things that you know as a baseball player, you get out of repetitions. He hasn't played enough baseball in his life. You could see it. You could see he's just a good athlete that's trying to play baseball, and to me it's different.
Yeah, he like forgot that he had to stay at first base on a line drive, and you could just see him getting doubled up every single time and hitting runs and so many different little nuances about the game. Like if you're not in it every single day, these little nuances are going to – the game is so fast, it's going to blow you away. And he couldn't have had a worse game to have his very first game. I felt so bad for him. I mean, Porcello with the nasty sinker, and then he had to – who else did – then he got hit by a
grounded into a double play, and they scored a run, but he didn't get an RBI.
No, he hit in a double play, and then he got hit by a pitch, and then he got struck out by a wicked curveball. It sunk about probably 3 feet. All he could do is just look at it and just walk
to
the dugout.
What I didn't like is the fact that he sort of eyeballed the umpire twice, two different times in that game when he got called out on strikes. I mean, the last time he got called out on strikes, he didn't even swing the bat. If you don't swing the bat, you don't deserve to be able to look at the umpire and sort of bitch about a call.
Oh, yeah. You know how many close call strikes that you're going to get in baseball that you disagree with? I mean, welcome to the big leagues. It happens every single game and every single at-bat. It's you against that umpire and the pitcher. And that's what we were talking earlier about. I'm for digital. I'm telling you, I hate umpires with a passion behind that plate, especially if you're a power hitter, because sometimes the umpire, hey, you don't think they could have something in for you. And, like, you look at Team Israel in the greatest upset in the history of baseball. It's got to be one of them.
Beating Cuba, unbelievable.
That Cuba thought that they were being squeezed when you look at the ratio of strikeouts to walks and you look at how many walks that the pitcher gave up. He, like, couldn't throw a strike, and this is Cuba. And, you know, you've got to think that he, in their minds, that they're being squeezed, and it all goes back to the umpire controlling the game. And
I made a joke about Jason Marquis having to start practically every game if Israel wanted to have a chance, and that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, that was prophetic, that's for sure.
But he's been good. I mean, Jason Marquis looks good. You could tell that if he were to pitch in the majors, he couldn't go more than five innings. He'd be like Colon. But he gives you a solid 3 to 5, like whatever he's allowed pitch-wise, and that's good enough. The interesting thing is when they played the Netherlands had a lot of major league players, a lot more than Israel, but they were all infielders, and they were all playing out of position. The one thing Israel has going for them is the guys playing the positions are good at the positions. They're good defensively.
And that's what wins ball games. When you look at it, defense wins games. They don't have any big hitters. They're not flashy.
Ike Davis.
They just win.
Ike Davis is the one big hitter, yeah.
Yeah, they just win games with good pitching. Like I said, Marquis, he may get picked up. It looks like Gagne is going to try to get picked up again. It's good to see him throwing pretty well.
Yeah. And the thing is, they still have Scott Feldman, who I guess hasn't seen action yet but could see action now that they moved to the different venue. So we'll see if Scott – you know, remember, Scott Feldman used to be able to bring it pretty good.
Oh, yeah, he's going to be a boost. I see Team Israel, they could win a game. I don't think they're going to do much splash. I think their biggest splash was Cuba. I think if they win another game, that would be a good thing for them. But I don't think, like I said, after beating Cuba, I think they've had a great run here.
It's been a fun ride because, you know, there's a lot of things going on in the United States with Jewish people. I'm one of them. And so right now we feel like we're a little downtrodden. And when you see a team like this representing you, it's really nice. And so they are representing a lot of Jews around the world, but in the United States too. And because a lot of them are American Jews that are playing. And it's fun to see this. You could see the guys have a good camaraderie. The manager is going to manage in Hartford this year in AA. Weinstein, he's actually – seems like he has a pretty good control of this team. This team eats together. They do everything together. I mean, it's fun. We know it's going to end at some point, but so far it's been a fun ride.
It is, and I'm glad you mentioned the point that they're playing ball regardless of the global animosity towards you know, the Jewish people there, and you know what's happening in America is disgraceful. And but the thing is, you know, there's a lot of problems going on there, and especially between, you know, in Palestine and the Israel state, and you know, who really knows what the answer is to all of that.
Nobody does.
And,
I mean, I agree with that.
All we can say is that hopefully through the games that we can realize that we're all humans, and that humanity trumps all, you know, anger and you know, disparity. So I'm really glad that you brought that up, because it was really
well
great
said.
The greatness of Israel and the players come together. And it's just a short period of time that Team Israel even started playing baseball, and they have enough players to even form a team. And now much less beat Cuba.
There's a passion. Jews have always had a passion for baseball. It goes back to before even Hank Greenberg. There was a guy, Lippman Pike, who was a big-time homer hitter. He'll be in my he's outlined a little bit in my new book, called Pioneers of Baseball, and he was like the first great Jewish power hitter. But of course, you know, when Hank Greenberg was around, I mean, there were a few hitters even better. And so that was when it really took hold, was really during that era. And so there's always been that passion. It's grown. Guys like Sandy Koufax, guys like Euclid, plenty of guys. And so it's fun to see. Now let's switch it to today's game, because, you know, there's an interesting thing going on. While we've noticed that Noah Syndergaard has pitched really well, for some reason the Mets have come out today and said that he's got a mystery illness and they can't figure it out. I don't know why they would tell anybody, because from what we could see as the public, he's pitching well. Yet they're saying, well, you know, he's got a sickness that's lingering, and so, like, you know, it's just a weird thing. He's supposed to be the opening day starter. It sort of places a little doubt on that.
I'm not. I think he's still going to be the opening day starter. I think it's more has to do with contracts. His agent may be pressing for some $20 million a year contract right away, and they may be trying to tame it down a little bit by saying, "Hey, there may be some issues here that we are concerned about, and maybe some, you know, really small."
Well, he's saying he ran out of gas in the game, and they say he's on medication. So it is more than that. I mean, he is on legitimate medication. I mean, what Met fans go back to is when Ike Davis had that, like, Rocky Mountain disease, and he was out for a while. It doesn't seem like he has this. It seems like it's a combination of bronchitis and something else, but he's not concerned. But when you hear that they can't seem to get the handle on it, which, again, sometimes happens. Sometimes we all get colds that linger for a couple weeks, and then they just go away, and there's nothing a doctor can do about it. But when it's a player like Noah Syndergaard, all of a sudden we all care.
Yeah, I wish more players used the shark liver oil. And I think, I found that to be very helpful for me whenever I had any type of, cold or flu or type of anything kind of illness in my body. And not too many players know about the shark liver oil, but it's something that may help him. I don't know what he's taking. I really would hesitate to take any prescription medication. But the shark liver oil is something that's proven to myself. And if he's listening to the show, hopefully we'll go grab some as soon as possible.
Well, here's something that broke today, and this is a little bit sad. Dwight Gooden, Dallas Strawberry, we all watched them break into baseball together. We all saw how they could be magical together, and we also saw how they could dislike each other. And, you know, they had buried the hatchet within the last couple of years, and now Gooden just says, you know what, he's tired of Strawberry taking pot shots at him. Apparently Strawberry was saying he was homeless and a lot of other things, and Gooden's like he's tired of it, and he's basically cutting him out of his life, and that's rough for Met fans to see. That's a rough thing. Not everybody has to get along, we get that, but this is like now become an outward thing that we all sort of knew was out there, and now it's bad.
And that's shocking to hear, and that is shocking. Yeah, the last I heard, there was a little dispute on the radio show. They were supposed to promote their 30 or 40 by 40 show, or 30 and 30 show, Doc and Darryl. And, you know, they were always friends, and you could tell when I was with the Mets how close, they were. Darryl had gotten traded over to the Dodgers, and he was kind of a mispresence there with Doc, and they just weren't the same, without each other, and when they played together, it was magic, and it seemed like Darryl Strawberry had his best games when Doc was on the mound, and to see their friendship, disintegrate to where it is today, that is sad, and it's sad for the game, because the baseball fans, when they think of Doc Gooden, when they think of Darryl Strawberry, all they can think of laugh and smiles and good times.
Gooden thinks there's a jealousy. Whatever it might be, it's just, it's sad to see. But Gooden says he's good friends with, guys like Ron Darling and other players from the 86 team. But, we just don't like to see it. We got about a minute left. Anything catch your eye lately in baseball?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit about Bryce Harper. Sometimes the superstars, they don't want to, play in spring training, and they want to kind of milk it all. And this guy's coming out swinging. And I look for a big year from Bryce Harper. It's really good to see him taking spring training seriously. And he's going to be off to a big year. And a couple of predictions. Like I said, I predicted the Yankees on the last show. But I really like the Cardinals. I've been studying the Cardinals in the National League and some of the moves that they've made over the break here. And they're going to make a run. I like Matheny, the old manager there. I played with him. He's a catcher with the Brewers.
Yeah.
And it's going to be an awesome year. Again, it's going to be an awesome year. So I'm excited.
No, it'll be an awesome year. And again, we thank Mark Littell for coming on and spending some time with us, especially since he was already busy this evening. And we'll have more shows just like this. That's going to end this episode of the game, and we'll catch everybody next time.
My man.